Okay, so we are holding on Nun Amadei 10 lines from, 9 lines rather, from the bottom. The line begins Haguma. Okay, we mentioned in the Mishnah about the case where a person had a pot of food, where he did atmana, he had insulated the pot of food in a basket that was full of shearings of wool. Now, we said the shearings themselves are mukta, except under certain, sometimes can be mukta. We said in the end, the final halacha was that they're mukta if they come from a warehouse, and usually you're going to be putting them back in the warehouse afterwards and selling them to make cloth or whatever, and only if you designated that forever you're going to be using them, that you're going to be using them long term for hatmana, would they not be mukta? But if you didn't do that designation, they would be. So we said in the Mishnah, you have a situation there where you have such a basket full of these wool shearings, and you have the pot inside it. So the laws of Azariah says when you're going to take out the food, you have to tilt the basket on its side and take out the food rather than taking out the pot itself, because he's concerned that, and the Chacham say there's no concern. So we said that actually the actual machlokes between them is what happens if the question is, are we concerned that when you take out the pot, that the hole is going to get destroyed, that the wool is going to fall in there, and then you're going to have a problem because then you're going to think to start moving it in order to get the pot back in, and you can't because it's mukta. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is concerned about that. The Chachamim are not concerned about that. So obviously, in other words, if the hole does, in fact, collapse, if the wool does collapse into the hole, then everybody's going to agree you can't put it back and you can't move the wool around. But so the question is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is concerned that it might collapse, and the Chachamim aren't concerned about that. Okay. So since we're mentioning that, so I want to mention a similar concept in another area of halacha. Amar Rav Huna, hai slikusta. So Rav Huna says a slikusta is a type of plant that Rashi describes that it's a beautiful and aromatic plant. People keep it around for the beauty of it and for the smell of it. What you do is you take a flower pot, you fill it up with moist dirt, you stick the slikusta plant into that dirt, you put it in front of Sorim, in front of noblemen or whatever. When he wants to smell it, then you pull it out so it doesn't actually get rooted into the ground. In other words, I guess the idea is the wet dirt is just meant in order to preserve it, to keep it from fading, but it doesn't actually get rooted in the dirt over there. So when you want to smell it, then you pull it out of the hole in the dirt, you smell it, and then put it back. So Rav Huna is saying like this: Dosa, if you stuck the slikusta plant into the dirt before Shabbos, Shofar, and then you took it out also before Shabbos, Vahadur Dosa, and then you stuck it back in, this is all before Shabbos, then Sharia, then you would be allowed to take it out of there on Shabbos. The reason is because that Rashi says, because once you did that, once you took it out, then the next time you take it out, the hole is already wide enough that you don't have a problem that you're going to be moving the dirt, which the dirt would be mukta. So therefore that would be mukta. But if you didn't do that whole process before Shabbos, then it would be after, because on Shabbos itself you're moving the dirt. A number of Rishonim, starting from Tosfos, have a bit of a problem with that, because wouldn't that be an example of tiltum and asad? Wouldn't that be an example of tiltum and asad, where you're moving the dirt indirectly because you're picking up the plant, which is not mukta, and because of that the dirt is moving? But many of them say that actually what it would be is the problem would be that you're digging, if you don't do that process before Shabbos, then it comes out that you're digging a hole, or at least you're enlarging the hole on Shabbos, which is part of the malacha of chodesh, of plowing. But if you did it before Shabbos, then already the hole is large enough, so it's not a matter of dirt, which is mukta, it's a matter of that then you're not making the hole any bigger and doing the malacha of chodesh. In the same vein, Omer Shmuel, Hai Sakina de Beni Urbi, Shmuel says, by the same token, if you have a knife that you stick in between rows of bricks on a wall, you stick it into the soft mortar, the soft dirt between one brick and next, same thing. Dosa, if you st- stuck in the dirt, if you stuck in the knife before Shabbos, shofar, and you pulled it out, v'hodur dosa, and then you put, and then you pushed it back in again, then shari, then you're allowed to pull it out on Shabbos, because again, by the same token, according to Rashi, you're allowed, because now you're not going to be moving the dirt and whatever, the dirt and mortar between the bricks is also mukta, because it doesn't really have any particular use on Shabbos. But if you did that a few times, we as you said, if you pulled it out and put it back in before Shabbos, now already the hole is wide enough that when you bring out the knife again, you're not going to be moving any dirt, therefore it would be mutter. Or according to the other Rishonim, we would say that now you don't have the malacha. So in the case of the plant and the dirt, the problem was the malacha of chodesh. Here the malacha would be boina, because one of the told us that the malacha of boina is drilling a hole, is making a hole in a wall or something like that. And here, if the hole was too tight, you'd be doing that. But like this, once you loosen up the hole by putting the knife in and out and back in, then you're not doing that malacha. The ilav oster, and if not, then it would be oster because of mukta according to Rashi, because of boina according to the other rishonim. Also, the Gemara says, speaking of sticking knives into things, mazutra v'itemer of Ashi Yoma, mazutra, or some saying of Ashi says, bigudisa dekoni shatudam. Another place where you could stick a knife into you is in a thicket of, reeds. So you have a bunch of reeds that grow tightly together. In particular, Rashi says you have one branch or one stalk that divides into a bunch of branches, so they're very close together. So therefore, they're close together, so it's a good place to stick things in that'll stay there, that are not going to fall down. Therefore, you're allowed to stick a knife in there on Shabbos. Shatter dummy is fine. Now, what would be you might have thought the problem was that while you're sticking in the knife, you might accidentally cut off the peel, the outer layer of one of their, or scrape off the outer layer of one of these weeds, and then that would be the malacha of memachet, of smoothing out. But we're not worried about that, and you're allowed to do that because again, it's not stick ratio, and it's not something that you intend to do. Okay. And then the truth is, even if it was psik reisha, you have Rishonim who talk about an interesting concept called psik reisha deloy nichale. If you have a psik, something that's psik reisha, but you don't want that effect to occur, I guess the truth is maybe in this case that's not really relevant, I guess, because it's not that you don't want to, you don't care one way or the other, like the case of dragging a bench where we're digging up the dirt. But you do have cases, and we'll talk about them, I guess, here and there in the Masechta, where you have something which is a psik reisha, but you actually don't want that to happen. So is that also or not? But in any case, here, I guess, that's fine. That's not relevant. But the point is, still, it's not psik reisha that you're going to scrape off or cut off the outer layer of one of these weeds, and therefore you're allowed to stick the knife in there. Tosfos points out, Now there is a separate issur of using trees on Shabbos. So therefore, Tosfos says it would have to be the only way this would work is if you're sticking it into the bush below three tefachim, within three tefachim of the ground. Otherwise, if it's above three tefachim from the ground, then you have that zeda d'rabbanan of that you're not allowed to use trees and bushes and things on Shabbos. Okay. Amalei Rav Mordechai l'Rava. Okay, so Rav Mordechai says to Rava, I have a contradiction then. You're telling me that if you don't, that in the, going back, for example, in the case of the slikusta plant, we were saying that you have to pull it out of the dirt, out of the flower pot before Shabbos, and then put it back in, and only then are you allowed to take it out on Shabbos. Rav Ktina pointed out a contradiction to Rav and Shmuel about the plant, about the knife, from the following Mishnah says, "Atonin lefes tznoinus tachas hagefen." If a person buries turnips or radishes under a grapevine in order to preserve them, so he's not planting them there. He's putting them in the ground in order to preserve them. And this way he'll pull them out of the ground where they don't have refrigerators, you know. So this way they'll be preserved in the dirt. So the Mishnah says, "Im hoya miktas all of the gulin, if some of the leaves of the turnips or whatever are uncovered and sticking out of the ground, Then ain't a choshesh loy mishum kilayim, the loy mishum shvius, the loy mishum meiser. Then you don't have to be concerned about kilayim. We know you're not allowed to plant vegetables in a vineyard, but in this case, it's not considered planting because you didn't put them there in the ground in order for them to take root. We'll talk in a second whether they actually did take root, but certainly as long as they didn't take root, there's no problem with kilayim. It's not considered that you planted them there. And that means, by the way, even if they, it's actually, Tosfos says, we're talking about even if they did end up taking root, even if they did, you didn't intend for them to take root, but they ended up doing so, what Tosfos says is that if they took root, then you're right, you might have a problem, but at least as far as some of the genome that we're discussing over here, but if they didn't take root, now you could sometimes you have plants that you put them in the ground, and even without taking root, they still start growing larger. Nevertheless, that wouldn't be a problem, the fact that they grew larger. Normally, we say if vegetables are in a vineyard and they grow larger by 1/200, then they become osur, and the grapevine here then become osur. But here they don't, because you didn't put them in there for the purpose of planting. You put them in there in order to preserve them, and they didn't get rooted. So you don't have to worry, again, as long as some of the leaves are uncovered. Although Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim asked on that what do you mean? If you leave the leaves uncovered, that is the normal way of planting things in the ground, is you put the root in the ground and the leaves above ground. So therefore a number of the Rishonim here have a different girsa, not mixtas all of Megulin, but mixtas some Megulin. If some of the turnips or whatever themselves are uncovered, so now they're not completely in the ground, but some of them are above ground. Anyway, depending, so you don't have to worry about kilayim. But let me show you shviyas. If it's doing shmitah, you don't have to worry about that you were over on the genome of planting on shmitah, because again, you're not planting it; you're just putting it in the ground. The loymishum meiser, you don't have a problem of meiser. That it's considered like you replanted them, and now you have to take meiser from them again. Benitolin b'shabbos, and another din which is relevant to our sugya, you're allowed to take them out of the ground on Shabbos, meaning you grab a hold of the leaves and pull them out. In fact, Rashi says that this that we're saying that the leaves have to be out of the ground is really most relevant, Rashi says, as far as this din of Shabbos. For purposes of the other dinim of Kalayim and Shriyas and what have you, it doesn't matter, Rashi says, whether the leaves are in the ground or out of them, because either way, the point is you didn't put it in the ground for the sake of planting. Tosfos again discusses that and says maybe not necessarily. Maybe this thing about the leaves sticking out, or according to yet other Rishonim, that some of the actual bulbs are sticking out applies to the other genome as well. But at any rate, as far as Shabbos, we're saying that if the leaves of the plant or of the root of the turnip or whatever are sticking out of the ground, then you're allowed to pull it by the leaves and pull it out of the ground on Shabbos. So you see that there's no problem of moving the mukta dirt. You see that there's also not the problem of chodesh, that you're making the hole larger. So why should it be any different with the slichusta? Here we're not saying that you have to put the turnips in the ground and then take them out and then put them back in, and only then are you allowed to take them out on Shabbos. So why should it be any different with the slichusta or with the knife between the bricks? And the answer is, you're right, Kyupta, that is a clear contradiction. And you're right, in fact, you would be allowed to take the slichusta or the knife out without putting them back in first before Shabbos. And there's no problem of moving the dirt, and there's no problem of digging up the dirt. So Tosfos over here discusses that there is a machlokes in various places in our Masechta, whether you are in fact allowed to move muksa min hatzad indirectly. We've touched on this before. So there's an opinion that says that not. But even that opinion would agree over here that it's fine, similar to the case we had in our Mishnah of picking up the pot lid and taking off the wool shearings with it, because the difference is tiltum and asab that they're talking about over there is talking about, let's say, for example, would you be allowed to take a stick and move a muksa item with it? You're moving the muksa item directly, but using the stick. Versus over here, where you're picking up one thing and the muksa thing goes along with it, that would be muksa. Okay. Mishnah said, continuing on the topic of hasmana, loy kisahu mib'oidyoim, if you did not cover the pot before Shabbos, Then you're not allowed to cover it after Shabbos begins, because, as we learned before, you're not allowed to do Hatmana on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do Hatmana on Shabbos. So therefore, so it's too late. Even though the item that you're going to cover it with is not Dovra Moshe Tevel, it's not something that adds heat, it's only something that preserves heat. But we said that the whole concept of Hatmana, the whole Isurim of it is Dinabanan, and part of the Isur was, one aspect of the Isur was that you're not allowed to do Hatmana at all on Shabbos. We said because you might find that the pot is not hot enough, and you're going to heat it up, and then you're going to be over on an Isur of Shabbos. But Sohu v'nitzgala, but if you covered the pot and then it got uncovered on Shabbos, we'll talk about whether it means on Shabbos or on Erev Shabbos, so you covered it before Shabbos and it got uncovered, mutl v'chasoisa, then you're allowed to recover it. So first of all, now, so what are we talking about? Do we mean that it got covered on Shabbos or even on Erev Shabbos? Tosfos learns that we're talking about even if it got uncovered on Erev Shabbos and you didn't get around to recovering it before Shabbos, you would still be allowed to recover it on Shabbos, because after all you did do that Hatmana before Shabbos, and therefore so the Mishnah uses the expression Nisgala, which means it was uncovered. Meaning, in other words, Tosfos says there's two things. There's where it got uncovered by itself, accidentally the things fell off, and verses you have where you took off the cover. So Tosfos learns that if it got uncovered by itself, then it would be mutter whether that happened on Shabbos or on Erev Shabbos. But if you yourself uncovered it before Shabbos and did not recover it before Shabbos, then you tackle wouldn't be allowed to. So in other words, Nisgala, when the Tosfos, doesn't mean you're not allowed to cover it if you uncovered it, but it means if you uncovered it before Shabbos and did not recover it before Shabbos, then you would not be allowed to, because that would be, in effect, doing a new Hatmana. That's how Tosfos learns. And then you have other Rishonim, say, for Ashurma, and others, say that no, what it means is we are talking about Nisgala, we mean that it became uncovered on Shabbos. So what it's saying is, so not like Tosfos that it became uncovered on Erev Shabbos and you didn't realize before Shabbos and you're allowed to cover it. They say that no, it means that only if it became uncovered on Shabbos itself. So they would say that if it became uncovered on Friday, then regardless, you're not allowed to cover it on Shabbos, whether that was intentional or not. But if it became uncovered on Shabbos, then you would be allowed to. In Shulchan Aruch, passing like the second opinion. So you would have to be careful before Shabbos that your pot is in fact covered, because otherwise you're not going to be able to cover it on Shabbos. Continues the Mishnah. Mimala es akita, and a person is allowed to fill up a pitcher of cold water. And then he's allowed to put it under a pillow or under a cushion. What would be the purpose of that? Rashi learns that you're doing it the other way around. Up until now, we've been talking about insulating hot food to keep it hot. Now we're talking about insulating cold food to keep it cold. So that would be allowed, because the whole issue of Hatmana on Shabbos is where you're trying to warm it up because of the reasons we said, because you might then go and heat up the pot on Shabbos, or because there might be cold, there's going to be live coals in the material you're using for Hatmana, and you're going to stir them up. But when you're insulating something for the purpose of keeping it cold, then there's no issue in that, and therefore you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. Most of the other Rishonim understand, though, that the case over here is that you have a pitcher of very cold water, and you're trying to take off the chill of it. So in other words, according to Rashi, the point is, let's say that you had water that you just took out of the fridge, and you want to keep it cold, so you're putting it in something that'll keep it cold until you're ready to drink it. And according to the other Rishonim, what we're talking about is that you have the water came out of the fridge and it's very, very cold, too cold to comfortably drink. So you want to put it under a pillow or something and let it warm up a little bit so it'll be more comfortable to drink. They learn that you're allowed to do that on Shabbos, because even though it's heating up, it's not heating it up anywhere near Yad Sova Desfrei. It's not really getting heated up, per se. It's just taking off the chill, and that would be mutter, because like this, it's not in a place where it could ever even reach anywhere near Yad Sova Desfrei. Okay. So let's discuss that last point. Let's focus on that last point about Hatmana of cold things on Shabbos. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Mutar Lahatmin of Hatsonin, you're allowed to do Hatmana of cold things. Again, according to Rashi, that you're doing it in order to keep it cold, and according to the other Rishonim, that you're doing it in order to warm it up a little bit. Amr of Yosef, Rav Yosef, and Michael Mashmalan. But what is Shmuel? What is Rav Yehuda Amr Shmuel telling us? What's the Chiddush and what he's saying? Tanena, we just said in our Mishnah, Mamala Adam Kitten, Renosim, Tachazakar, or Tachazakasis. We just said you're allowed to fill up a pitcher of water and put it under a pillow or under a cushion. Amalei Abaya. Abaya answers Rav Yosef. As a matter of fact, Rav Yehuda is telling us something big. He is telling us something that we would not have learned, known from the Mishnah. Because if all we had was our Mishnah, have our Mishnah, then we would have thought, Hani Mili, you know when you're allowed to do Hatmana of cold things, Dabasha in Dazil Hasmin, things that you don't normally do Hatmana to in the first place. People don't usually do Hatmana of cold water in order to warm it up or in order to keep it cold. Therefore, you'd be allowed to do it. But so in other words, even according to Rashi that we're talking about that you're putting the water in there in order to keep it cool, but you could have, it could end up happening what the Mephoshim, what the other Rishonim are saying the other way around, that it starts warming up, but it's not normal to do that with water. With water, you don't usually do that to warm it up a bit like that in order to, in order to heat water. You're not going to do Atmana in the first place with the intention of heating the water, because it's not going to get heated up. It's not going to get heated up by that. Water is one of those things. We learned in the previous Perek, we talked about the concept of Kalei Habishol. You have certain things that cook very easily. Water, we said, is not one of them. The water, you're never going to cook it by putting it, you're never going to cook it or even reach it, you know, even get it to reach the Yavtala display by putting it among pillows. So therefore, maybe the Mishnah is saying that would be allowed. Avol Dover Shadakri Lahatmin, but what about when it comes to food, which is normal to do Hatmana, and after all, you might have when it comes to food, not necessarily you need to boil it up in order to eat it. Maybe all it is you need to warm it up a little bit, and then so it is normal that sometimes a person might decide, you know what, that's good enough. I at least now I got it to room temperature. Now it's good enough to eat. So maybe then loy, maybe you should not be allowed to do that on Shabbos, even in pillows. Kamash Malon, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda wants to tell us that no, the fact is you are even allowed to do that. You are allowed to put the food among pillows in order to get it up to room temperature, because the fact is it's not the way of cooking. It's not reaching anywhere near Yavtala this way, and therefore there's no problem with it. But that we couldn't have learned from the Mishnah, which only mentions water, where water you actually have to put on a fire or on some source of heat in order to boil it. And people don't necessarily, you're not gonna put it into a pillow, thinking that I'm gonna get it up to room temperature that way. Okay, so that's it. So the halacha is that you're allowed to do Hatmana of any kind of cold thing. There's no whether it's in order to keep them cold or whether it's in order to get them up to room temperature. You're allowed to do that. Okay. More on this topic. Amr of Huna Amr Rav, or Amr Rebbe, it says on the side, also lahatmin es hatzonin. You're not allowed to do hatmana of cold things. We just said that you're allowed to, but Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, or in the name of Rebbe, is saying you're not allowed to. The question is, v'altan Rebbe hitzu lahatmin es hatzonin. We learn in a braita that Rebbe gave permission to do hatmana of cold food. The answer is, loikasha. It depends. Before Rebbe heard the din from Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi versus after it. Rav Huna's report was actually what they heard and what they reported. What Rebbe said before he heard from Rabbi Shmuel, before Rebbe heard from Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi that you're allowed to do that. But after he heard from Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, he changed his mind. And that's what the Braita is saying, and that's what the Mishnah then is saying, that you're allowed to do it. He heard the Yosef Rebbe, as we actually have the example, that Rebbe was sitting for Omar, and he was saying, again, also Lahatman of Hatzonin, you're not allowed to do Hatmana of cold food, because, again, as we said, certain kinds of food cook easily, and therefore maybe you're going to become, if you put it in pillows or whatever, then you're going to do regular Hatmana. You're going to do regular Hatmana in order to actually heat it up, and it would be awesome. Amr in front of Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, so Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi says in front of Rebbe, Abba, Shitu, Lahakmin, and Sapanian. You should know, my father, Rav Yossi, said that you are allowed to do Atmana of cold water. Omar, the Rebbe said, oh, in that case, if your father, Rav Yossi, said it, okay, then I change my mind. Kvar Horazakin, the old Tamil Chacham, the old respectable Tamil Chacham, has already passed in, and therefore, okay, then I change my mind, and then I change my mind, and I say that you are, and I agree that you are allowed to. So therefore, so that's the Rebbe originally thought it's also, and that's what Rav Honan was reporting. Later on, he changed his mind based on the report of what Rav Yossi said, and said that it's mutter. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Amar of Papa. By the way, Boyer A, Kama Mechavdin Zezeh. Come see how much Tamar Chachamim love each other. Very appropriate now for Shira, by the way. Come see how much Tamar Chachamim love each other. She'ilu Rav Yossi Kayim. Consider what would happen if Rav Yossi himself had been alive at the time. Then he would be bowed down and sitting in front of Rebbe because Rebbe is a Nasi. So even though Rebbe Yossi was much older than Rebbe, he belonged to the previous generation, he wouldn't be going and passing in front of Rebbe because Rebbe would be the Nasi and Rebbe Yossi would be subject to him. And yet, yet Rebbe is saying, I'm Mevato, my das, even though I'm the Nasi, I'm Mevato, my opinion, in favor of Rabbi Yossi's opinion, even though Rabbi Yossi would rank lower than me in terms of the Nasius. Tosfos points out that actually Rebbe himself had at one point been Rabbi Yossi's Talmud, but then Rebbe became so wise in Torah that now he ends up knowing more than Rabbi Yossi. So that's the point. So it's a different way of looking at it. It's not just a matter of the covet of the Nasius. It's the fact that now, if Rav Yossi was still alive, Rebbe would have surpassed him in knowledge of Torah. And yet Rebbe is saying that once Rav Yossi said it, then I'm being mevatel my das in favor of Rav Yossi. But we see how much the Talmid Chachamim love each other. Okay. More on this topic of Hatmana of Tzanin. Amalei Rav Nachman Ledoru Abde. Amalei Rav Nachman Ledoru Abde. Rav Nachman says to his servant Doru, ask me Litzanin, do Hatmana of cold food for me, because as we just said, you're allowed to. And also, the Aisi Limaya, the Akin Kfila Arma. Also, by the way, he says to him at a different time, on a weekday, he tells him, go bring me water that a Goisha cooks heated up. Now, we know there's the concept of Bishul Akum, but we know also that Bishul Akum does not apply to things that you could eat raw. And water, of course, you can drink without boiling. So therefore, Rav Nachman is saying, by telling his servant to go bring him water that was heated up by a Goyesha cook, amounts to saying, which is in fact the halacha, that you're allowed to drink such water because such water is not considered bishulach. Okay. So on the other hand, the Gemara says, Shomer Rav Ami v'iskad. Rav Ami heard that Rav Nachman had said this, and he objected, and he was angry at Rav Nachman for doing that. The question is, Amar Rav Yosef, my time is fine. So Rav Yosef is asking, what's Rav Ami's problem with it? Should I well say of it? After all, what Rav Nachman is doing is, in both cases, is according to a psak that he got from his, is according to what his rebbeim taught. Chodek to Rav, the Chodek to Shmuel. One is based on Rav, the other one is based on Shmuel, and good, Rav Nachman is a Talmud of Rav and Shmuel, he's entitled to follow their opinion, so what is Rav Ami upsetting him for? When it comes to Atmana, it was Kishmuel. When it comes to Atmana, he's following what Shmuel said. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mutal Hachman of Atmanin, you just quoted that Rav Yehuda had said in the name of Shmuel that you allowed to do Atmana of cold food, so then, in that case, he's entitled to tell Doru to do that. Kirav, and the other one about Bishul Akum is like Rav, the Amr of Shmuel by Yitzchak Amar Rav, Kol Shehu Nechok Mos Shehu Chai, anything that could be eaten as it is, raw, without cooking, ain by Mishum Bishul Enochrin, then there's no issue of Bishul Akum in it. So therefore, water is not subject to Bishul Akum. So what's the problem? So what does Rav Ami have a problem with Rav Nachman? Fine, Rav Ami doesn't have to hold like them. Rav Ami is an Amora. He can argue with Rav and Shmuel. But why is he upset with Rav Nachman for following Rav and Shmuel if Rav Nachman is entitled to do that? The answer is, Rav Ami said, that's true. Nevertheless, Adam Choshev Shaini. An important person like Rav Nachman is different. He has to be machmir more on himself, because otherwise people are going to learn from him to be careless with mitzvahs. So therefore, yes, Rav Nachman is entitled to follow these kolos as a matter of halacha. But if somebody sees him doing it, then they're going to be makel even more. They're going to think if Rav Nachman is allowed to do atmana, then they're going to think they're allowed to do atmana even if hot food. If they see him drinking water that was boiled by a guy, then they're going to think that they can eat other foods that are cooked by a guy. And therefore, Rav Ami says that Rav Nachman shouldn't do that. So now the Gemara is going to bring a bunch of brises about dinim of hatsmana and various related topics, and with that we'll complete the parak. Tana Rabbanan, we learn a brisa. Afal pi she'omru af ein tomin afilu b'dava she'ein moisef hevel m'sheikha sheikha. Even though we said that you're not allowed to do hatsmana, even with something that does not add a heat, if you're doing it after Shabbos began, even though that's true, however im bala hoisef moisef. However, if you want to add on Shabbos, then you're allowed to add. Adding, I mean, Rashi says, you're allowed to add another covering on top of the initial one. Meaning, in other words, so let's say you had your pot insulated in wool shoeing, like we talked about previously. Now you want to, in addition, you have it inside a basket. Now you want to, let's say, on Shabbos, wrap a blanket around the whole thing. You're allowed to do that. Because you had already done Hatsmana before Shabbos, and now you're just adding to it. Obviously, you would have to have that you're not causing that it's going to get hotter to the point where it'll cook on Shabbos. But we're talking about again that you're using material that's ain't most of hevel, and we're talking about the food was completely cooked. So then most of you're allowed to do that. The Mishnah, the Braisa rather, continues. Kate said, "Who oisa? How do you do it?" For example, you could take off that before Shabbos you had done hatmana using linen sheets, and now instead you're replacing them with glufkarin, which are woolen blankets, which do a better job protecting the heat. So let's say, for example, in other words, you did hatmana with linen sheets. Now you realize that, you know what, that's not going to preserve enough of the heat. By the time I come to eat the food on Shabbos, it's going to be colder than I want it to be. So therefore, instead, he wants to replace them with woolen blankets, which do a better job keeping the heat. You're allowed to do that, says Rav Shimon Gamliel. Oy, no trouble. Or the other way around. Let's say that you put it in woolen blankets, and now you realize it's summertime, it's going to get overheated, and it's going to keep too much of the teeth, and then it might spoil, so you want to instead replace them with linen sheets. Then you can do that. It's not a problem. Now, is Rav Shimon Gamliel agreeing with the Tanakhama, or is he disagreeing? On the face of it, I mean, the Braisa says, Kesed hu oisa, how does he do it? Which seems to be, therefore, that's a continuation of what the Tanakhama is saying. So you have actually a number of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yonah, and others say that actually Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying that the Tanakhama is saying not only you're allowed to add a layer, but you're even allowed to replace the existing layer that's there. On the other hand, Tosfos says that we take out the word Kesed hu oisa in the Braisa, and Rav Shimon Gamliel is actually arguing with the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama would only allow you to, with the Tanakhama would only allow you to add a layer, or to add a layer or take away a layer, and Rav Shimon Gamliel would be allowing you even to replace the existing layer that's there. So two different ways of understanding what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying. V'chein hoyer Rav Shimon Gamliel lemer. Similarly, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, loy osu ela oisei necham. When we say that you're not allowed to when we say that you're not allowed to do hatmana in davar hamosif, that you're not allowed to do hatmana on Shabbos of the pot, even in something that's not Moisiv Hegel, that would only be Loi Osriela Oisei Mecha. The Chachamim only ask if you do it. If, for example, we're talking about water, let's say about water, if it's in the same kettle, in the same pot or whatever that you cooked it in before Shabbos. But if you poured it from one container into another, so you poured it now into a kli sheni mutter, then you would be allowed to do hatmana. Because once it's in a kli sheni, it's not staying so hot anyway. And the point is, because hashtakuri kamekula, if look, what is he accomplishing by pouring it into a second container? He's now cooling it off. Before it was in the klirishon that had been on the fire, and that retains a lot of heat. Now he's pouring it into another container. So obviously, our tochi kamir tachlei, is he then going to go and boil it up? Obviously not. If he really was intending that it should stay that hot, then he would have left it in the original. He would have left it in the original pot or the original kettle or whatever. So therefore we can allow him to do hatsmana, because now at this point it's considered like tzonin, and we said before mutar lahatmin af tzonin, that you're allowed to do hatsmana. Tosis points out, by the way, that Revi before, when Revi thought that you were not allowed to do hatsmana of tzonin, that he thought only in a scenario like this where you clearly demonstrated that you want to cool it off by pouring it into another container, then you would be allowed to do hatmana on around a Shabbos. But he thought that if the cold water, for example, was originally in the container that you had it in, maybe it should be after. Until Rabbi Shmuel of Rabbi Yossi told him otherwise. Because again, since the whole problem with hatmana is that he might come to boil it up on Shabbos if he realizes that it's cooled off more than he wants it to be, but the very fact that he put it into another keli, which now is cooler, and then starts cooling it off, demonstrates that he doesn't have any such intention, and therefore to do hatmana on that would be mutter. It's similar to what we said before about doing hatmana of tzonin. Another din, taman v'kisa b'davar anita b'shabbos. What happens if you did hatmana and you covered it with something that is allowed to be moved on Shabbos, something that's not mutter? So in other words, all this time we've been talking about that you have the pot is covered, and then you put on top of it, and then you have the pot lid on top of the pot. Now you have, and then on top of the lid, then you have the material you're using for hatmana. Now let's talk about the other way around. What if instead of the pot lid, you put something else, which is mutter to be moved on Shabbos, and then on top of that you did hatmana, and on top, the top of the pot, instead of being covered with the actual pot lid, you used something else instead as a makeshift pot lid. So it could be that the other material that you used for hatmana is not mukta, or another case, the davar she'oy taman b'davar she'einin yitzal b'shabbos. If you did hatmana and covering with things that are allowed to be moved on Shabbos, so both the hatmana material and the covering of the pot are both things that are mutter to move on Shabbos. Or the hatmana material was something which is mukta, like the wool shearings we talked about before, but the pot lid is something that you are allowed to move on Shabbos. No problem. Then you're allowed to take out the pot and put it back because you're allowed to take off the pot lid. Again, the fact that there's mukta on top of it doesn't matter because we said it's not a bosik l'davar aser. And the Chachamim in the previous Mishnah would even allow you to take out the pot, provided that the whole, and then if the whole collapses, then you have a problem. But otherwise, if the whole doesn't collapse, then you're allowed to put it back in. But Taman b'kisa b'davar she'einin nitzal b'shabbos. But what happens is both the hatmana and the covering of the pot were using things that are not allowed to be moved on Shabbos. or the cover itself is mukta, but what's surrounding the cover, the insulating material, is not mukta. So in other words, either way, if the cover is mukta, then you have a problem. Therefore, im haya magula mitzasai, if part of the top, if part of the upper part of the of the pot itself is uncovered, then no to the master, then you'll be allowed to take the pot, you'll be allowed to pick up the pot by the uncovered part and take it out of there. Because then it comes out that you're not, then it comes out that you're not moving mukta directly. Then it comes out, you're taking off the pot and the mukta thing, and the mukta thing comes along with it. And we said before, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to move mukta items. You're allowed to move non-mukta items where mukta goes along with it, as long as it's not a basis for davar aser. And in this case, it's not a basis for davar aser because, again, you did it, you put it there mainly in order to cover the pot. Therefore, you'd be allowed to do that. So you'd be allowed to pick up the pot. So again, you're not allowed to pick up the cover directly because the difference is the cover itself is not basis to the pot. Because when you're using a pot lid, which is meant to be used for covering a pot, then it's bottled to the pot. But when you have, you're using something else, you're using something else as the lid, you're using something else as the lid, then it can become a bottle for double author. So then you have a problem. Then you're not allowed to lift off the lid directly. So now all you can do is if part of the pot is uncovered, then you're allowed to reach in and lift up the pot by those upper edges and pick up the whole pot and then the lid comes off. Being loud, but if not, if the lid covers the entire pot, Aiden knows the master. Then you can't pick it up. Then you can't pick it up and put it back, because then the only way to reach the pot would be to pick up the mukta item. So therefore it would be also. So now Rashi asks. Why don't we say that you should be allowed to, given that we had, again, one of the cases over here was that we have four possible cases. One of them being where the cover of the pot is something that is mukta. Surrounding that as the insulating material, you have something which is not mukta. So Rashi asks, in that case, why is there a problem? Move the non-mukta insulating material aside, pick up the pot, and take it off together with the lid. So what's the problem? So why are we saying that? Why are we saying you can't do that? So Rashi says the reason is because that whole heter only applies if you forgot the mukta item on top of the keli. Here you put it there deliberately. Therefore, the keli becomes a basis for it. So therefore, the actual pot itself becomes a basis for davar aser. One way of looking at it is that we're talking about over here that because you're using something other than the actual pot lid, you're using something else, so therefore it's not bottled to the pot. The question is, then Tosfa says, in that case, what we're saying over here that so fine, but according to Rashi, if the pot itself is mukta, you wouldn't be allowed to take it out either way. So what are we saying? If part of the sides of the pot are uncovered, then you're allowed to lift it up in that case and take it out. So then you wouldn't be allowed to either. The pot is still a bottle for double after. So Tosfos and a bunch of other Rishonim talk about various possibilities of what the scenario is over here. Tosfos says something, and the Baal HaMor says something somewhat similar, that we're talking about a cover that covers the entire pot. In other words, there is no way of picking up the pot without first picking up the cover. So that would be the scenario over here. That's one possible scenario where you can't do it, because practically speaking, there's no ability like this. If the cover was just on top of the pot, then yeah, you could do that. Maybe you could record the toast with at least the pot itself would not be considered a boss for Java or author of the lid. But after all, even fine, it's not the regular lid of the pot, but it is meant to serve the pot, so therefore the pot wouldn't be bottled to it. But in this case, we're talking about a lid which completely covers the sides of the pot as well, and therefore there is actually no way of lifting up the of lifting up the pot without first lifting up that lid, which would be Mukta.
Why? I mean, you could lift the pot underneath the cover by its walls. Who says you cannot lift it up?
That's the point. According to this explanation of Tosfos and similar things in the Rishonim, in the Baal Amor, is that the problem is the lid that we're talking about, the covering that we're talking about, surrounds the sides of the pot also. So now there's no place, so there's no handhold where you're going to be able to lift out the pot without first picking up the mukta item. In other words, imagine it. Don't imagine it like a regular pot lid. Imagine it like, for example, like if you have a larger item. You have like a larger box, let's say, which is surrounding the whole pot and going all the way down to the bottom. So there's no part of the pot that's exposed that's outside of this mukta item. So that's what we're saying. Then you would have a problem because then you're moving mukta for that purpose, and you can't do that.
There's a lid that covers not only the inside of the pot but the outside of the pot, right?
Exactly. And specifically, we're talking about that lid itself is an item which is mukta.
And the lid is a davar smukti. But why couldn't you lift the pot by its walls itself? The pot is not moving.
Because the walls itself are covered by the lid. There's no way to reach the walls without first lifting off this lid. That's what we're saying.
Okay.
Picture, for example, picture that you have a pot, and on top of the pot, let's say, over the pot, covering the entire pot and the sides of it, picture that you put something mukta. I don't know. You can picture that you put a box, although obviously a box is not mukta, but let's say somehow you have a box which is mukta. So then you think about it. There's no way any part of the pot that you want to reach is inside the box. There's no way to reach any part of the there's no way to reach any part of the pot without first lifting off the box. So that's what we're saying. If that box is mukta, then you have a problem.
But again, you're saying that the margins of the lid extend downward and prevent someone
downward all the way to the bottom of the pot. Exactly.
Virtually downward, and that prevents a person from touching the pot?
Yes, because now the only way to touch the pot is to move the mukta out of the way. You can't do that. So, suppose this uses the expression over here, and then the Baal Amor uses a similar expression that we're talking about that goes all the way down to the blood. Toast is using the expression shakjeda blew up the sota, the pot is swallowed up inside the mukta item. So the only way to take off the lid would be if you lift it off a little bit, and you can't do that. The Baal Amor uses a similar expression that the cover of makish oisam, it holds up neseho, it's surrounded on all its walls, umagia ablakarka, and reaches down all the way to the floor. The same idea,
yep.
It's praising the same thing as Tosfos in different words. Basically, that what it means is there's no way to reach any part of the pot without going through the mukta. So that's what we're saying would be also. Well, according to Rashi, we don't even need that. According to Rashi, just the fact that the item itself that you use to cover the pot is mukta is enough to make the pot itself be considered a bosses for Java or ulcer, and therefore you wouldn't be able to lift up the pot in that case. Tosfos then gives another possible answer that we're talking about, that whatever you have above the pot is something that's mukta. So there's no way to reach the pot unless you move the mukta item out of the way. Okay. Then continuing with more of the braisa on the subject of Asmana, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Na'orda Shalfish and Dachta Harei Kezevel. Rabbi Yehuda says, we quoted this earlier in the Perek, that fine combings of flax are like animal dung. So just like we said in the first Mishnah, you're not allowed to use animal dung for Atmana, because it's one of those moist hevel things. It's one of those things that adds heat to the pot. So you know, let's do Atmana in it even on Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Yehuda says the same thing is true as far as fine combings of flax. He would only allow you to use coarse combings. another din, the Braita says, Manichem Mechem al Gamim Mechem, you're allowed to put one kettle on top of another one in order for the top one to stay hot. You're allowed to put one pot on top of another, again, for the top one to stay hot. That's not considered hasmana. Rashi points out, the difference is, a mecha is made out of metal. A kadera, a pot, is made out of earthenware. An earthenware pot retains more heat than a metal pot, than a metal kettle. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to put one metal one on another, or one earthenware one on another. But you're not allowed to mix the two different kinds to put one on the other or vice versa. Now that's the girsa that we have in front of us. However, Rashi says that I don't like that girsa. The correct girsa but he just says he brings from the Tesefta that the correct girsa, which is where this braisa comes from, that the correct girsa would be So what Rashi says is that the Tesefta would be that you're allowed to do one on the other, or that you would be allowed to do a mechem al gabei kedera, but not the other way, kedera al gabei mechem, but not the other way around, because again the point is the kedera, the pot, retains more heat. And therefore, that would amount to hasmana. So again, according to that last girsa that Rashi brings, you would have three possibilities that are mutter. You could put a metal one on top of a metal, an earthenware on top of an earthenware, or earthenware on top of metal, but not metal on top of earthenware, because that one would add too much heat, because the earthenware one retains much more heat. That's a girsa that Rashi brings. Rashi also brings another girsa, which many other Rishonim also accept, which is that you're allowed either way. You're allowed to mix and match. You're allowed to put metal on top of a metal pot on top of an earthenware pot, or vice versa. There's no issue one way or the other.
Now, but could you bring the phone a touch closer to you, please?
And the reason is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, because after all, it doesn't amount to hasmana, really, because as it is, the bottom pot is getting colder and colder as time goes on. So therefore, you're not really doing hasmana. Okay. Continues the braisa. Uvetoch es pi of a batek. Here's another din. When you have a pot full of food on Shabbos, you're allowed to put dough, you're allowed to smear dough around the edges of the pot in order to keep the heat inside, and there's no problem with hasmana with it. Now, of course, we can't be talking about that you're allowed to knead the dough on Shabbos. So, of course, it means you have to have the dough kneaded before Shabbos. But once you do that, then it doesn't amount to hasmana to put some around the edges where the lid meets the pot. Now, the Magen Avraham just briefly says, there's no issue of mimareach, of smoothing out with it, which is a malacha that we talked about before. The Machta Shekel there goes into a long discussion about why that should be, and the answer is, he says basically, that actually, if you were to actually press the dough into place and smear it, to smooth it out there in place, then actually that would be awesome. What we're talking about over here is you can take the dough there and stick it on without smearing it into place, and that would be mutter. It could be, I don't know for sure, because I didn't look this up, but it could be that that's relevant to the case of, for example, ointments on Shabbos, when we were talking about before, that you can't put on an ointment and smear it on, but maybe based on this, you would be allowed to just, like, you know, squeeze it out of the tube and just put it onto the skin without actually rubbing it in. Based on this Machta Shekel, maybe it would be mutter. I'm not sure about that, though. All right, continues the braisa. Uchshem she'en tomin asachamin, just like you're not allowed to do hasmana of hot food, kach en tomin asachamin, so also you're not allowed to do hasmana of cold food. But we said Rebbe hit to lahatmin asachamin. We said on Amun Aleph, Rebbe said you are allowed to, which was, as we said, after Rebbe Shmuel, Rebbe Yossi had told him that Rebbe Yossi allows it, and Rebbe changed his mind. But this braisa, so this braisa represents that. And then the braisa continues with another din. You're not allowed to crush snow or hail or ice on Shabbos in order for the water to flow out of it. You're not allowed to do that, Rashi says, because you're doing the malacha of moiled. You're doing the malacha of creating something on Shabbos, because in effect, it's like you're creating the water on Shabbos.
Why is it just in the example of crushing, just taking out ice out of the freezer and letting it melt, you do the same thing, you accomplish the same result?
Good point. And actually, you actually have a discussion among Rishonim, if the ice melts on its own, would the water actually be nolad as well? You have different opinions among the Rishonim whether in fact if it melted by itself, then it would be nolad. They bring from the Sefer HaTrumah that says that it actually would be. But according to many Rishonim, now again, Rashi is saying over here the problem with crushing ice is that you're creating the water, but a number of other Rishonim learn, including the Rashba and others, learn that the problem is that you're doing a malacha of, you're doing something similar to schita. We know that you're not allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos to get juice out of it. So the same way over here, you're in effect squeezing the water, not that water, the ice or the snow or whatever, in order to get water out of it. So you wouldn't be allowed to do it on that basis. Again, the question of whether the water that comes out of it would actually be considered nolad, that's not so simple. But wait, let's finish off.
Hold on.
Let's finish and then we'll continue talking about this. Okay, let's continue and finish the braita and talk about a different case involved where you are allowed to do something with ice, and then we'll talk about it, okay? Fine. So we say you're not allowed to crush the ice, again, either because of molid or because of soichet. However, you are allowed to put ice into a cup of some kind of drink or into a plate of food in order to cool it off. Obviously, we're not talking about, for example, you're talking about a plate of hot soup. We're not necessarily talking about a plate of hot soup where you have a problem with bishul, but we're talking about where the food is not yatsalat, right? So then you'd be allowed to do that. The ain't choshish, and there's no problem with that, because then you're not melting it. It's causing it to melt, and therefore that would be mutter. If the whole problem, according to Rashi, the problem is molid, and here therefore there's no problem with molid because it's melting on its own in the cup rather than you actually putting it in there and melting it. The other way of looking at it is if we say that the issue is surface, if we say that the issue is that the issue is squeezing, then over here, those who are shown and say that actually we're going to talk about later in the Masechta, that you actually are allowed to, for example, squeeze a lemon directly onto food on Shabbos, because then the juice is not being used as juice, it's being used as part of the food. So therefore, so by the same token, those who shown him say that in this case you'd be allowed to actually crush the ice or break up the ice into the food on Shabbos because you're making it as part of food rather than as a drink. So the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is as follows: you're not allowed to break them up. You're not allowed to break them up with your hand. Because again, that would be like Rashi says over here. It would be like molid. You are allowed to put them into a cup of water or other kind of drink, and there's no problem as the Braita is saying over here. You're also allowed to put them in a place. You're also allowed to put them in a place where they're going to melt on their own. Because again, you're not causing them to melt. You're just putting them over there, and eventually they melt. That's the first opinion. The second opinion is, again, based on the Sefer HaTrumah, that you're not allowed to put it just to melt by itself. You're allowed to put it into a cup or into a bowl, as we say, of food, but not when it's by itself. And the reason is because, again, according to the Sefer HaTrumah, the water that comes from it, which is right there, in the bowl where you have the ice, would be osur. It would be noivad. So technically, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that technically the halacha is like the first opinion, but the minhag is the minhag is to be machmir, like the second opinion. And earlier in Shulchan Aruch, the Alter Rebbe says that if it's mokem atzlurich, if it's a time when you need it, then you can be makel like the other opinion. Which therefore the relevance of it would be, for example, so we have like this, in other words. So when it comes to using ice on Shabbos, so to take the ice and crush it, that was saying you're not allowed to do. When you're crushing it, when you're putting ice directly into a drink, that for sure would be mostly recommended to everybody. If you put, let's say you want a bowl of ice on the table that people can then take and put in their drinks, and as it's sitting on the table, it's going to start melting, is that allowed or not? That depends on the two opinions over here, whether you'd be allowed to do that or not.
Okay, question.
Now, go ahead.
Okay, if you put, you said ice in water, it's okay. What about ice in another liquid?
Doesn't matter. When I said water, I should have said any kind of liquid.
Okay.
In fact, Rashi actually says it here, shoyai in a cup of wine. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Again, according to Rashi, there's no problem with molid because it's melting on its own. And according to the other Rishonim, even if we say that the water itself is considered molid, like the Sefer HaTrumah says, still the fact of the matter is that water is never be'ein. There's no time when you can point to this particular drop of water and say that it came from the ice. And therefore it wouldn't be awesome.
Okay. Question two, water into ice.
So what do you mean? You have a cup full of ice and you're pouring water on it?
No, I'm taking water.
You're asking, can you make ice on Shabbos?
Making ice on Shabbos.
Okay, so that's a different question. Basically, the question comes down to, or if all you allow that there, it might be molded also. Same way as Rashi is saying over here, that changing the state of it from ice to water is molded. Arguably, doing the other way around is molded as well. On the other hand, you have a consideration that the fact is, again, you're not doing it. You're not doing it yourself. You're putting it in the freezer, and eventually it melts on its own. So you also have the Achronim talk about it. I think in particular Tzitzeliezer talks about it, and he talks about the I don't know. So in general we don't do it. So he says that fine, if it's not considered molid, and maybe even if we're going to be machmir, in the case of melting ice, then okay, we say we'll make or where there's a need for it. For example, you know, where you need ice on Shabbos, and therefore maybe it would be molder. So he's makel in it. I haven't looked whether other Achronim such as Ramosha agree with that. My understanding is in general we don't put water in the freezer to begin with on Shabbos to make ice, but ice that was in the freezer we used.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that though. All right.
Can you check? I can see if I can find something about it.
Okay, I'm looking up real quickly over here. I see there's a couple of opinions about it. Some Achronim allow it, some don't, but even the ones who allow it would say that you can only do that if you're going to be using the ice on that Shabbos. So you have different opinions. What to do in practice? All you're allowed to put water in the freezer to make ice on Shabbos is something to ask your local Rav. Again, if you have guests, for example, then you have more reason to be makel because then it's considered tzurich, as we said. But in any case, we'd have to make sure that you actually, you'd actually have to,
in particular, the Shevin and Rav was a great posik about 60 years ago. He said that actually it would be molid, or maybe even boina, and therefore it would be also. But again, you have achronim who allow it. In practice, you would have to ask the Rav, but in any case, definitely you would have to use the ice on that Shabbos. Okay. The subject of this next perek is like this. We know that besides that you're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos, we know you also have to have your animals rest on Shabbos. Ato, vincha, vitecha, etc., over hemdecha, that are not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. Now, one understanding of it is that the Tosfos discussed at the beginning of the Masechta, at the beginning of the perek, I mean, is that the Issur Daraisa would only be what's called mechamer acha behemta. If you're actually leading the animal and making it do malacha, like carrying something on Shabbos. According to Tosfos, if the animal was doing malacha on its own, then it would only be a mitzvah taseh that your animal is supposed to rest on Shabbos. So now in this parak we're going to be dealing what kind of things is an animal allowed to wear or carry in Rishut HaRabim on Shabbos. So again, are we talking about that if it does, then the owner is over on an Issur Daraisa because the animal is actually doing malacha on Shabbos? Or would we say, fine, the person's not getting malchus for it, it says at the end of the Masechta in the last parak, but nevertheless, maybe it would be Issur Daraisa. Or maybe it would only be Issur Daraisa if he's mechamer, if he's making the animal go, but not just if it's walking by itself. Then maybe it would only be Issur Daraisa. Be that as it may, that's the subject of our parak. What is an animal allowed and not allowed to wear in the street on Shabbos? The next parak, by the way, is going to deal with the same thing as far as human beings. What kind of jewelry and accessories and whatever are you allowed to wear on Shabbos and not allowed to wear on Shabbos? Now, yeah, sure, it says an interesting thing. So why do we put the dinim about what the animal can and can't wear first? The Pnei Yeshua says, because this is, all this time, the first four prakim of our Masechta, we've been dealing with things that we're talking about things that are also and not also on Shabbos, but actually these are all things that have to be prepared before Shabbos. We started talking about getting haircuts, about getting haircuts before mincha. We talked about that you're not allowed to go out with the needle in your clothes before Shabbos. We talked about what you're allowed to start with, your malachas that you're allowed and not allowed to start before Shabbos, even though they continue on Shabbos. That was in the first parak. Shabbos candles in the second parak. Leaving food on the stove, shahiyah, was in the third parak. Hatmana in the fourth parak. And now we're continuing with things that have to be arranged before Shabbos. In other words, for example, the Mishnah is going to mention various things that an animal is not allowed to have on it on Shabbos. Therefore, you'd have to make sure before Shabbos that those things are not on. So therefore, the Pnei Yeshua says that's what this parak is doing over here. As opposed to when we come to things that a person wears, accessories or jewelry or whatever that a person wears, you don't have to arrange that before Shabbos. You're on Shabbos itself. You have to know what you're allowed to put on and not allowed to put on. So that's the order. That's the reason for the order of the parak, he says. Okay. So the Mishnah starts off. Vame behema yoytza or vame eni yoytza? What is an animal allowed to go out to Rosh HaRabim wearing or wearing, and what is it not? So Rashi says that you have the matter of shvisa fandai. Now the rule that we're going to have in our Mishnah is as follows: the first Mishnah is going to deal with things that are needed in order to keep the animal from running away. Or from running away or from damaging or whatever. Now, the rule is going to be like this. When you have something which is necessary in order to keep the animal where it's supposed to be and keep it from running away or keep it from damaging or whatever, then the animal is allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Rashi says that then it's considered a tachshit of the animal. It's considered like a decoration of the animal. And just like a person is allowed to wear a certain kind of jewelry on Shabbos, in the same way an animal is allowed to wear these things, which Rashi says amount to jewelry. The Ritva says that actually it's not really considered jewelry, it's considered clothing. The point of that machloitis, we'll see tomorrow, because we're going to discuss tomorrow the question, what if you have something on an animal that's only decorative, is the animal allowed to wear it outside on Shabbos, which we'll discuss that tomorrow, Beth Hashem. So like this, but if you have something that's needed in order to guard the animal, then it's considered something that the animal is allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Yotze ha-gomol ba'aser, you're allowed to have a camel go out on Shabbos with a bridle or a halter is like the kind of thing that you have. You have a rope or strap or whatever that goes around the mouth of the animal. Like think of like, for example, when you go horseback riding, you have that whole harness on the horse's head. That's an aser. You're allowed to have a camel go out with that on Shabbos because that's what you need in order to control it. The naka b'chatam, a naka, which is a different kind of camel. Rashi translates it by a word. That means a dromedary. You have these two types of camels. You have the camels with one hump. You have the camels with one hump and the camels with two humps. So the Rashi is translating it with a word. That means that the type of camel that has two humps. So that kind is different than a regular camel. B'chatam, you're allowed to have it go on Shabbos with a chatam, which we're going to see in the Gemara, is a thing that goes over the animal's mouth made out of metal, like a metal mouth guard or a metal mouth guard or something like that, or a metal muzzle. A knocker needs more control. A knocker needs more control than a regular camel. Therefore, you're allowed to do that. The lugdikim, a lugdikim, which the Gemara is going to say is a type of very strong donkey. The krumbia is allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a krumbia, which the Gemara is going to say is a metal bit in its mouth. The sus, the share, a horse is allowed to go out on Shabbos with a collar on its neck. Where you have a collar, and then you have a little ring over there that you put a rope into, and you lead the animal around using that. It's allowed to go out on that Shabbos. V'chol balei hasher yotzim b'sher v'nim shochan b'sher. In general, any kind of animals that normally wear a share, that normally wear a ring or a ring-like collar around their neck like that, they're allowed to go out on Shabbos with that in Rosh Hashanah Abim. Then you shachan the share, and you're allowed to pull them along on Shabbos using that collar. So let's say, for example, a dog or other creatures like that that normally wear a collar around their neck. Then you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to have a rope that goes through the collar and a rope or a leash or whatever, and then pull the animal by the leash. We'll see in the Gemara tomorrow that the Shem what the chiddush of that part is that you're allowed to lead it on Shabbos. But we have to mention over here something. Now, the simple meaning of share over here, as we're saying, means a collar or a ring or something around the neck. There's a very famous explanation from the Alter Rebbe, which is then brought in a number of places in the Chiddush, that the word share over here is also the word shir, which means a song. And what it means is, we're called balei ashir, on a deeper level, on a higher level, it means all the various malachim that are associated with song, all the various levels of kedusha that are associated with song, yotzim b'sher, they're brought out from where they were before with song, v'nim shachan b'sher, and they're drawn from one level to another, from one level to a higher level, using song. And this is the importance of song in Torah and Chiddush. There's a story in that connection where the Alter Rebbe one time visited the city of Shklov, which was in those days most of the people in Shklov were Misnagdin, and they're asking him a ton of questions. They're asking a ton of questions in Torah and everything. And instead of answering, he sang for them a niggun, and all of them then were brought up to a higher level, and all of a sudden all of their questions disappeared. So now they're understanding Torah on a whole different level. In fact, it's brought that the chassidim is shlov from then on, because a number of the misnagdim then became chassidim as a result of that. And the chassidim there who lived there gave that nigron a name. They called it the nigron of Matan Torah. So that's what I've got, giving them the Torah with that nigron. What that nigron is, I don't know if we know nowadays, unfortunately. But in that case, there is this idea that a nigron brings a person and brings a level of, brings a person to a whole different level and brings even a malach to a whole different level.
What's the connection between the shear of an animal, which is preventing him from basically doing what he wants, and the song of a man? I mean, what's the connection?
Well, I mean, when you get down to it, you don't want the animal to do whatever it wants, right? I mean, you have to ask the question, if all of these things that we're talking about, all of these halters and bits and whatever, I mean, the animal would much rather not have them, right? But the fact of the matter is, the animal is there in order to serve you. So therefore, I don't care that the animal itself doesn't want it. The fact that you need it in order to control the animal, then therefore it's considered a tachshit, or it's considered a garment for the animal. So therefore, it depends on your needs, not on the animal's needs. So the same thing. The song is not just meant, you're not just singing in order for yourself. You know, you have goyish music, like bring the person where they're not supposed to be. Just the opposite. We're talking about music of Kedusha that brings the person to where he is supposed to be, to where Hashem wants. Continues the Mishnah. By the way, other dinim involving animal collars. Umazin aleihen. Suppose that the collar becomes tameh. You're allowed to sprinkle parah, drum of water on it while it's on the animal's neck. The tovon, and similarly to tovel it, if it became tameh, bimakoman, while it's in its place. In other words, what you do is you bring the animal to the person who's sprinkling the parah, drum of water, and he sprinkles and it lands directly on the collar. That will be mutter even though it's on the animal's neck. And the same thing, when it comes to toveling it, you bring the animal into water, you make the animal go into the water up to its neck, and therefore the collar is automatically toveled, provided that the collar is loosely enough around the neck that the water can get underneath it. If the collar is tight, then obviously that doesn't work. Okay. So, good morning. My knocker b'chatom, when we said in the Mishnah that you're allowed to have a knocker go out on Shabbos with a chatom, what is a knocker and what is a chatom? It means specifically a female white camel. This mama, the parazola, is allowed to go on Shabbos using an iron muzzle, because these kind, the white ones, particular white, or I guess like very pale colored or whatever, are very wild and very easy to run away. So therefore, with them, a halter, a bridle, is not enough to control them. They need an iron. They need an iron muzzle. An iron muzzle, or actually not really a muzzle. Actually, Rashi says that what it means is that it means an iron. Sorry, not a muzzle, but Rashi uses the word muzzle. But Rashi explains that it means a nose ring. Actually, you put a ring in the animal's nose and lead it around by that. That's the only way that you can control a knocker, so therefore it's allowed to wear that on Shabbos. Then the Mishnah said the lugdikim b'krumbia, that your lugdikim is allowed to go out on Shabbos with a krumbia. So what is that? I'm going to put it means hamra luva. It means a donkey from Luv, which is, Tosfos says, some area of Egypt or some area near Egypt or whatever. It might be today's Libya, it might not. But anyway, the donkeys from there are very, very strong and very, very wild. And you're allowed to do Pagi de Parazola. You're allowed to have it go out on Shabbos with an iron bit in its mouth. The bit goes into the animal's mouth, and you control it that way, like you think of the bit of a horse. It's a similar kind of thing. Because again, the idea is that the Shamra Luva is very powerful and very, very difficult to control, and therefore the only way to do it is using an iron bit like that in its mouth and then tied to a harness around its head. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions a short story. Levi shodder Guzi Lebechazoi Lemizban Lechamra Luva. Levi one time sent money to Levi, who lived in Babel, he sent money to Bechazoi, which was an area elsewhere in the same kingdom, but it was very, very far away. It was months' journeys away. Nowadays it's part of Iran. So he sent money over there, Mizbam like Hamra Luva, that he wanted them to buy him a Hamra Luva and send it back to him. So he sent them money for that purpose. Saru, what they did is, when they received the money, they tied it back up in a bundle, Shadrule Sari, and in the bundle they also added some barley, which was a signal, Lamemar, which was they meant to hint to him, you don't need to spend all your money on a Hamra Luva and bring it all the way from Bechazoi, which is months away. The Nigri, the Hamra Sari, the steps of a donkey depend on the barley that you feed it. In other words, they're giving him a message, basically, you don't need a Hamra Luva, you don't need an expensive, hard-to-control donkey like that if you want to have a donkey that's able to carry very heavy burdens. And you don't have to go and buy it from a place that's months journeys away. Just buy a regular donkey, feed it good food, feed it barley, and you'll have yourself the equivalent of a Hamra Luva. Okay. So that explains what a Hamra Luva is. So the Gemara asks, Machlisin lifnei Rebbe. They one time asked Rebbe the other way around. Shall zuba zu mahu. What would happen the other way around. So like we said in the Mishnah, a regular camel needs an asker, a regular harness. A naka, we said, needs a hatam, needs a nose ring. What about the other way around? What about, for example, a regular camel wearing a nose ring or a naka wearing a regular harness, a regular rope around its mouth? Would that be mutter on Shabbos? Now, the point is, an asker is not enough for a naka because a naka is too wild to be controlled by that. A camel to have a nose ring would be too much. The average camel doesn't need that. So the question is, when the Mishnah says the camel with the asker, the naka with the nose ring, is it dafka that way, or could it be the other way around also? And the Gemara clarifies, naka ba'aksa loitiboylof, actually one half of the question, there's no question you can't take a naka out on Shabbos wearing only an asker. Because kindle and mintra, since the asker is not enough to protect it and to keep it from running away, therefore masriyus, that would just be considered a burden, because not something that serves any practical use. So therefore, no question that you can't do that. The question is, can you have a camel go out with a nose ring on Shabbos? Do we say, given that a camel doesn't need such strong protection, an oxer is enough for it. So therefore, to do something more than that, to do a nose ring, maybe a nose ring would be considered a burden for the camel, and therefore it would be oxer. Or maybe Nitsuru, if you say so, maybe we say something more than what's needed on a normal basis is also considered something that's allowed. Because the fact of the matter is, you can use a nose ring to control a camel, you just don't need to. So that's the question. In other words, would it be considered, it's more than you need to, so is it a mastery, or is it the fact that it does serve a function, you can control the animal with it for not? So that was the question. That's the question. You say the environment and mastery, maybe we say that extra protection is not considered a mastery. So the Gemara continues, Omar Lefon of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi says to Rabbi, Kach Omar Abba, this is what my father said, Arba behemis yosis ba'aser. There are four kinds of animals that can go out on Shabbos with an aser, with this harness, with this bridle around its mouth. Hasus, a horse. Now in the Mishnah we said a horse something else, a collar, so we'll deal with that later. But the horse, the pered, a mule, the gomel, a camel, the hamer, and a donkey. Now, when we have that list, l'ma'uti mai, what are we coming to exclude? Lav l'ma'uti gomel b'hatam. Presumably, Rabbi Yossi with that is saying that a camel, you can't use a camel, davka has to be with an aster, not with a nose ring. So therefore, there you go. The answer would be that a camel, you can't take out with a nose ring. Right, not necessarily. L'ma'uti naka b'aster. It could be Rabbi Yossi's list is meant to exclude taking out a naka. This white female camel, which is more powerful and more prone to run away, that kind you can't take out with an aster. Because again, as we said, an aster is not something that is usable to keep it from running away anyway. Therefore, for sure, it's a burden. So we thought that Rabbi Yossi can't be coming to tell us such an obvious statement. No, we could say Rabbi Yossi is coming to tell us that. So not necessarily is he saying that a camel is not that a camel is not allowed to go out with a chatam on Shabbos. Maybe not. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and talk about then what is the din as far as that. If you put on the animal something more than what is needed to keep it from running away or from damaging, is that considered a masri or not?
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.